Chapter 1. The Nature and Scope of Macroeconomics. Page 1. Introduction. The term macro was first used in economics by Ragnar Frisch in 1933. But as a methodological approach to economic problems, it originated with the mercantilists in the 16th and the 17th centuries. They were concerned with the economic system as a whole. In the 18th century, the physiocrats adopted it in their table economic to show the circulation of wealth, that is, the net product, among the three classes represented by farmers, landowners, and the sterile class. Malthus, Sismondi, and Marx in the 19th century dealt with macroeconomic problems. Walras, Wicksell and Fisher were the modern contributors to the development of macroeconomic analysis before Keynes. Certain economists like Cassell, Marshall, Piaggio, Robertson, Hayek and Hautre developed a theory of money and general prices in the decade following the First World War. But credit goes to Keynes, who finally developed a general theory of income, output and employment in the wake of the Great Depression. Nature of macroeconomics. Macroeconomics is the study of aggregates or averages covering the entire economy, such as total employment, national income, national output, total investment, total consumption, total savings, aggregate supply, aggregate demand and general price level, wage level and cost structure. In other words, it is aggregative economics which examines the interrelations among the various aggregates, their determination and causes of fluctuations in them. Thus, in the words of Professor Ackley, quote, macroeconomics deals with economic affairs in the large, it concerns the overall dimensions of economic life. It looks at the total size and shape of the functioning of the elephant of economic experience, rather than working of articulation or dimensions of the individual parts. It studies the character of the forest independently of the trees which compose it. Note 2. G. Ackley, Macroeconomic Theory, 1961, page 4. Macroeconomics is also known as the theory of income and employment, or simply income analysis. It is concerned with the problems of unemployment, economic fluctuations, inflation or deflation, international trade and economic growth. It is a study of the causes of unemployment and the various determinants of employment. In the field of business cycles, it concerns itself with the effect of investment on total output, total income and aggregate employment. In the monetary sphere, it studies the effect of total quantity of money on the general price level. In international trade, the problems of balance of payments and foreign aid fall within the purview of macroeconomic analysis. Above all, macroeconomic theory discusses the problems of determination of the total income of a country and causes of its fluctuations. Finally, it studies the factors that retard growth and those which bring the economy on the path of economic development. The obverse of macroeconomics is microeconomics. Microeconomics is the study of economic actions of individuals and small groups of individuals. The study of particular firms, particular households, individual prices, wages, incomes, individual industries, particular commodities. But macroeconomics deals with aggregates of these quantities, not with individual incomes, but with national income, not with individual prices, but with price levels, not with individual output, but with the national output. Note 3. K. E. Boulding, Economic Analysis, page 237. Page 2. Microeconomics, according to Ackley, quote, deals with the division of total output among industries, products, and firms, and the allocation of resources among competing uses. It considers problems of income distribution. Its interest is in relative prices of particular goods and services. End of quote. Macroeconomics, on the other hand, quote, concerns itself with such variables as the aggregate volume of the output of an economy, with the extent to which its resources are employed, with the size of the national income, with the general price level. End of quote. Note 4, G. Ackley, OPCIT, page 4. Both microeconomics and macroeconomics involve the study of aggregates, but aggregation in microeconomics is different from that in macroeconomics. In microeconomics, the interrelationships of individual households, individual firms, and individual industries to each other deal with aggregation. The concept of industry, for example, aggregates numerous firms or even products. Consumer demand for shoes is an aggregate of the demands of many households, and the supply of shoes is an aggregate of the production of many firms. The demand and supply of labor in a locality are clearly aggregate concepts. Note 5, IBID, page 4 and 5, 1. However, the aggregates of microeconomic theory, according to Professor Billas, do not deal with the behavior of the billions of dollars of consumer expenditures, business investments, and government expenditures. These are in the realm of microeconomics. Note 6, R. A. Billas, Microeconomic Theory, page 1. Thus, the scope of microeconomics to aggregates relates to the economy as a whole, together with sub-aggregates which A. cross product and industry lines, such as the total production of consumer goods or total production of capital goods, and which B. add up to aggregate for the whole economy, as total production of consumer goods and of capital goods add up to total production of the economy, or as total wage income and property income add up to national income. Note 7, G. Ackley, OPCIT. Thus, microeconomics uses aggregates relating to individual households, firms, and industries, while macroeconomics uses aggregates which relate them to the economy wide total. Scope and importance of macroeconomics. As a method of economic analysis, macroeconomics is of much theoretical and practical importance. 1. To understand the working of the economy. The study of economic variables is indispensable for understanding the working of the economy. Our main economic problems are related to the behavior of total income, output, employment, and the general price level in the economy. These variables are statistically measurable, thereby facilitating the possibilities of analyzing the effects on the functioning of the economy. As Tinbergen observes, macroeconomic concepts help in making the elimination process understandable and transparent. For instance, one may not agree on the best method of measuring different prices, but the general price level is helpful in understanding the nature of the economy. 2. In economic policies, macroeconomics is extremely useful from the point of view of economic policy. Modern governments, especially of the underdeveloped economies, are confronted with innumerable national problems. They are the problems of overpopulation, inflation, balance of payments, general underproduction, etc. The main responsibility of these governments rests in the regulation and control of overpopulation, general prices, general volume of trade, general outputs, etc. Tinbergen says, working with macroeconomic concepts is a bare necessity in order to contribute to the solutions of the great problems of our times. Note 8, J. Tinbergen, Opposite Italics Mine. No government can observe these problems in terms of individual behavior. Let us analyze the use of macroeconomic study in the solution of certain complex economic problems. Small 1. In general unemployment. The Keynesian theory of employment is an exercise in macroeconomics. The general level of Employment in an economy depends on effective demand, which in turn depends on aggregate demand and aggregate supply functions. Unemployment is thus caused by deficiency of effective demand. In order to eliminate it, effective demand should be raised by increasing total investment, total output, total income and total consumption. Thus, macroeconomics has special significance in studying the causes, effects and remedies of general unemployment. Page 3. Small 2. In national income. The study of macroeconomics is very important for evaluating the overall performance of the economy in terms of national income. With the advent of the Great Depression of the 1930s, it became necessary to analyze the causes of general overproduction and general unemployment. This led to the construction of the data on national income. National income data helps in forecasting the level of economic activity and to understand the distribution of income among different groups of people in the economy. Small 3. In economic growth. The economics of growth is also a study in macroeconomics. It is on the basis of macroeconomics that the resources and capabilities of an economy are evaluated. Plans for the overall increase in national income, output, employment are framed and implemented so as to raise the level of economic development of the economy as a whole. 4. In monetary problems. It is in terms of macroeconomics that monetary problems can be analyzed and understood properly. Frequent changes in the value of money, inflation or deflation, affect the economy adversely. They can be countered by adopting monetary, fiscal and direct control measures for the economy as a whole. Small 5. In business cycles. Further, macroeconomics as an approach to economic problems started after the Great Depression. Thus, its importance lies in analyzing the causes of economic fluctuations and in providing remedies. 3. For understanding the behavior of individual units. For understanding the behavior of individual units, the study of macroeconomics is imperative. Demand for individual products depends upon aggregate demand in the economy. Unless the causes of deficiency in aggregate demand are analyzed, it is not possible to understand fully the reasons for a fall in the demand of individual products. The reasons for increase in costs of a particular firm or industry cannot be analyzed without knowing the average cost conditions of the whole economy. Thus, the study of individual units is not possible without macroeconomics. Conclusion. We may conclude that macroeconomics enriches our knowledge of the functioning of an economy by studying the behavior of national income, output, investment, saving and consumption. Moreover, it throws much light in solving the problems of unemployment, inflation, economic instability and economic growth. Limitations of macroeconomics. There are, however, certain limitations of macroeconomic analysis. Mostly, these stem from attempts to yield macroeconomic generalizations from individual experiences. 1. Fallacy of composition. In macroeconomic analysis, the fallacy of composition is involved. That is, aggregate economic behavior is the sum total of individual activities. But what is true of individuals is not necessarily true of the economy as a whole. For instance, savings are a private virtue, but a public vice. If total savings in the economy increase, they may initiate a depression unless they are invested. Again, if an individual depositor withdraws his money from the bank, there is no danger. But if all depositors do this simultaneously, there will be a run on the banks and the banking system will be adversely affected. 2. To regard the aggregates as homogeneous. The main defect in macro analysis is that it regards the aggregates as homogeneous without caring about their internal composition and structure. The average wage in a country is the sum total of wages in all occupations, that is, wages of clerks, typists, teachers, nurses, etc. But the volume of aggregate employment depends on the relative structure of wages rather than on the average wage. If, for instance, wages of nurses increase but of typists fall, the average may remain unchanged. But if the employment of nurses falls a little and of typists rises much, aggregate employment would increase. 3. Aggregate variables may not be important necessarily. The aggregate variables which form the economic system may not be of much significance. For instance, the national income of a country is the total of all individual incomes. A rise in national income does not mean that individual incomes have risen. The increase in national income might be the result of the increase in the incomes of a few rich people in the country. Thus, a rise in the national income of this type has little significance from the point of view of the community. Professor Baulding calls these three difficulties as macroeconomic paradoxes, which are true when applied to a single individual, but which are untrue when applied to the economic system as a whole. Note 9, K. E. Baulding, A Reconstruction of Economics, page 173. 4. Indiscriminate use of macroeconomics misleading. An indiscriminate and uncritical use of macroeconomics in analyzing the problems of the real world can often be misleading. For instance, if the policy measures needed to achieve and maintain full employment in the economy are applied to structural unemployment in individual firms and industries, they become irrelevant. Similarly, measures aimed at controlling general prices cannot be applied with much advantage for controlling prices of individual products. Page 4. 5. Statistical and conceptual difficulties. The measurement of macroeconomic concepts involves a number of statistical and conceptual difficulties. These problems relate to the aggregation of microeconomic variables. If individual units are almost similar, aggregation does not present much difficulty. But if microeconomic variables relate to dissimilar individual units, the aggregation into one macroeconomic variable may be wrong and dangerous. Difference between microeconomics and macroeconomics. The difference between microeconomics and macroeconomics can be made on the following counts. The word micro has been derived from the Greek word mikros, which means small. Microeconomics is the study of economic actions of individuals and small groups of individuals. It includes particular households, particular firms, particular industries, particular commodities, and individual prices. Macroeconomics is also derived from the Greek word makros, which means large. It deals with aggregates of these quantities, not with individual incomes, but with the national income, not with individual prices, but with price levels, not with individual output, but with the national output. The objective of microeconomics on demand side is to maximize utility, whereas on the supply side is to minimize profits at minimum cost. On the other hand, the main objective of macroeconomics are full employment, price stability, economic growth, and favorable balance of payments. The basis of microeconomics is the price mechanism, which operates with the help of demand and supply forces. These forces help to determine the equilibrium price in the market. On the other hand, the basis of macroeconomics is national income, output, and employment, which are determined by aggregate demand and aggregate supply. Microeconomics is based on different assumptions concerned with rational behavior of individuals. Moreover, the phrase ceteris paribus is used to explain the economic laws. On the other hand, macroeconomics bases its assumptions on such variables as the aggregate volume of output of an economy, with the extent to which its resources are employed, with the size of the national income, and with the general price level. Microeconomics is based on partial equilibrium analysis, which helps to explain the equilibrium conditions of an individual, a firm, an industry, and a factor. On the other hand, macroeconomics is based on general equilibrium analysis, which is an extensive study of a number of economic variables, their interrelations and interdependences for understanding the working of the economic system as a whole. In microeconomics, the study of equilibrium conditions are analyzed at a particular period, but it does not explain the time element. Therefore, microeconomics is considered as a static analysis. On the other hand, macroeconomics is based on time lags, rates of change, and past and expected values of the variables. This rough division between micro and macroeconomics is not rigid, for the parts affect the whole and the whole affects the parts. Dependence of microeconomic theory on macroeconomics. Take for instance, when aggregate demand rises during a period of prosperity, the demand for individual products also rises. If this increase in demand is due to a reduction in the rate of interest, the demand for different types of capital goods will go up. This will lead to an increase in the demand for the particular types of labor needed for the capital goods industry. If the supply of such labor is less elastic, its wage rate will rise. The rise in wage rate is made possible by increase in profits as a consequence of increased demand for capital goods. Thus, a macroeconomic change brings about changes in the values of microeconomic variables. In the demands for particular goods, in the wage rates of particular industries, in the profits of particular firms and industries, and in the employment position of different groups of workers. Similarly, the overall size of income, output, employment, costs, etc. in the economy affects the composition of individual incomes, outputs, employment, and cost of individual firms and industries. To take another instance, when total output falls in a period of depression, the output of capital goods falls more than that of consumer goods. Profits, wages, and employment decline more rapidly in capital goods industries than in the consumer goods industries. Page 5. Dependence of macroeconomics on microeconomic theory. On the other hand, macroeconomic theory is also dependent on microeconomic analysis. The total is made up of the parts. National income is the sum of the incomes of individuals, households, firms, and industries. Total savings, total investment, and total consumption are the result of the saving, investment, and consumption decisions of individual industries, firms, households, and persons. The general price level is the average of all prices of individual goods and services. Similarly, the output of the economy is the sum of the output of all individual producing units. Thus, the aggregates and averages that are studied in macroeconomics are nothing but aggregates and averages of individual quantities which are studied in microeconomics. Let us take a few concrete examples of this macro dependence on microeconomics. If the economy concentrates all its resources in producing only agricultural commodities, the total output of the economy will decline because the other sectors of the economy will be neglected. The total level of output, income, and employment in the economy also depends upon income distribution. If there is unequal distribution of income, so that income is concentrated in the hands of a few rich, it will tend to reduce the demand for consumer goods. Profits, investments, and output will decline. Unemployment will spread, and ultimately the economy will be faced with depression. Thus, both macro and micro approaches to economic problems are interrelated and interdependent. Macrostatics, macrodynamics, and comparative statics. Microstatics. The word statics is derived from the Greek word statike, which means bringing to a standstill. In physics, it means a state of rest where there is no movement. In economics, it implies a state characterized by movement at a particular level without any change. It is a stage, according to Clark, where five kinds of changes are conspicuous by their absence: the size of population, the supply of capital, methods of production, forms of business organization, and wants of the people remain constant. But the economy continues to work at a steady pace. It is to this active but unchanging process, writes Marshall, that the expression static economics should be applied. Static economy is thus a timeless economy where no changes occur, and it is necessarily in equilibrium. Indices are adjusted instantaneously: current demand, output, and prices of goods and services. As pointed out by Professor Samuelson, economic statics concerns itself with the simultaneous and instantaneous or timeless determination of economic variables by mutually interdependent relations. There is neither past nor future in the static state. Hence, there is no element of uncertainty in it. Professor Kuznets therefore believes that static economics deals with relations and processes on the assumption of uniformity and persistence of either the absolute or relative economic quantities involved. Macrostatics analysis explains the static equilibrium position of the economy. This is best explained by Professor Kurihara in these words: if the object is to show a still picture of the economy as a whole, the macrostatic method is the appropriate technique. For this technique is one of the investigating the relations between macro variables in the final position of equilibrium without reference to the process of adjustment implicit in that final position. Note 11, K. Kurihara, An Introduction of Keynesian Dynamics, page 22. Such a final position of equilibrium may be showed by the equation Y is equal to C plus I, where Y is the total income, C is the total consumption expenditure, and I is the total investment expenditure, all in capitals. It simply shows a timeless identity equation without any adjusting mechanism. This macrostatic model is illustrated in figure 1. So if we try to explain figure 1, we have on the x-axis the income, on the y-axis is C and I. So there are two lines, C and C plus I, which are drawn starting from two different points on the y-axis. Both these lines are parallel to each other and are at a certain angle with the x-axis. There is another line which is at 45 degrees angle from the origin. It intersects C plus I, which is higher than C, at a point E. And if we drop a perpendicular from E to the x-axis, that point on the x-axis is Y. Going back to the text, according to this static Keynesian model, the level of national income is determined by the interaction of aggregate supply function and the aggregate demand function. In the figure, 45 degrees line represents the aggregate supply function and C plus I line the aggregate demand function. 45 degrees line and C plus I curve intersect at point E, the point of effective demand, which determines OY level of national income. Page 6. Thus, economic statics refers to a timeless economy. It neither develops nor decays. It is like a snapshot photo from a still camera, which would be the same whether the previous and subsequent positions of the economy were subject to change or not. Macro dynamics. Economic dynamics, on the other hand, is the study of change, of acceleration or deceleration. It is the analysis of the process of change which continues through time. An economy may change through time in two ways: A, without changing its pattern, and B, by changing its pattern. Economic dynamics refers to the latter type of change. If there is a change in population, capital, techniques of production, forms of business, organization, and tastes of the people, in any one or all of them, the economy will assume a different pattern, and the economic system will change its direction. In the accompanying diagram, given initial values of the economy, it would have proceeded along the path AB. But suddenly, at A, the indices change the pattern and the direction of the equilibrium changes towards C. So I will try to tell you what the pattern is. So one arrow leads to A. From A, we have two arrows, one going to B in the straight direction as the previous arrow, and the other going to C if there is a change in direction. And this other arrow goes to C. So if we continue in the same direction, C goes to D. But if there is a change in direction, C goes to E. So basically, if we continue in the same direction as the first, A goes to B. For a change in direction, A goes to C. Now if you continue in the same direction, C will go to D. But if the direction is changed, it goes to E. Continuing with the text. Again, if it would have proceeded to D, but at C, the pattern and direction is changed to E. Thus, economic dynamics studies the path from one equilibrium position to another, from A to C, and from C to E. Economic dynamics is therefore concerned with time lags, rates of change, and past and expected values of variables. In a dynamic economy, data change and economic system takes time to adjust itself accordingly. According to Kurihara, macrodynamics treats discrete movements or rates of change of macro variables. It enables one to see a motion picture of the functioning of the economy as a progressive whole. Note 12, K.K. Kurihara, opposite page 21. The macrodynamic model is explained in terms of the Keynesian process of income propagation, where consumption is a function of the income of the preceding period. That is, C1 is a function of Y, T-1, and investment is a function of the time and of constant autonomous investment, delta capital I. That is, I1 is equal to the function of delta I. So we have figure 2, in which there is income on the y-axis and CI on the x-axis. So as in the previous case, we have one line from the starting from the y-axis at a certain angle. That line is C plus I. Another line parallel to it at a distance delta I from the first line on the y-axis, we have the second line CI plus delta I. So these two lines are parallel to each other. So if we draw a 45 degrees angle line from the origin, intersects C plus I at E0 and C plus I plus delta I at EN, then there are lines perpendicular to the x-axis passing through E0, passing through EN. So this first line intersects y-axis at y0 and on the other line C plus I plus delta I at small t and C plus I at t0. The 45 degrees line which intersects C plus I plus delta I at EN, from EN the perpendicular to the x-axis is yn, and the point of intersection on C plus I plus delta I is t plus 2. If we take the point T on C plus I plus delta I, if we draw a perpendicular from that point onto the 45 degrees angle and extend that onto the line C plus I plus delta I, it will be T plus 1. And if we drop a perpendicular from there to the x-axis, it will be Y1. So that is figure 2. So in this figure, C plus I is the aggregate demand function and 45 degrees line is the aggregate supply function. If we begin in T0, where with an equilibrium level of income OY0, investment is increased by delta I, then in period T, income increases by the amount of the increased investment from T0 to T. The increased investment is shown by the new aggregate demand function C plus I plus delta I. But in period T, consumption lags behind and is still equal to the income at E0. In period T plus I, consumption rises along with the new investment. It increases income still higher to OY1. This process of income propagation will continue till the aggregate demand function C plus I plus delta I intersects the aggregate supply function 45 degrees line at En in the nth period, and the new equilibrium level is determined at OYN. The curved steps T0 to En shows the macro dynamic equilibrium path. Comparative statics. Comparative statics is a method of economic analysis which was first used by German economist F. Oppenheimer in 1916. Schumpeter described it as an evolutionary process by a succession of static models. In the words of Schumpeter, whenever we deal with disturbances of a given state by trying to indicate the static relations obtaining before a given disturbance impinged upon the system and after it had had time to work out itself. This method of procedure is known as comparative statics. Note 13. J. A. Schumpeter, History of Economic Analysis, 1954, page 965. To be precise, comparative statics is the method of analysis in which different equilibrium situations are compared. The distinction between static, comparative statics and dynamic situations is explained with the help of the accompanying figure. So we have two points A and B, and there is a double-sided arrow between these two points. If the economy is working at situation A, where it is producing at a constant rate without any change in variables, it is in a static state, which is functioning at a point of time. Page 7. When the economy moves from the equilibrium point A to point B through time, it is economic dynamics which traces out the actual path of movement of the economy between the two static equilibrium points. Comparative statics, on the other hand, is related to once over change from point A to point B, in which we do not study the forces behind the movement between the two points. Thus, comparative statics is not concerned with the transitional period, but involves the study of variations in equilibrium positions corresponding to specified changes in underlying data. The Keynesian employment, income and output analysis is also based on the theory of shifting equilibrium, wherein it compares different equilibrium levels of income. According to Kurihara, Keynes made no attempt to show the process of transition from one position of equilibrium to another. He simply used comparative statics analysis. Figure 3 explains two different levels of income. So in figure 3 we have on the x-axis time and on the y-axis national income. There are two points marked on time T1 and T2 such that T1 is less than T2. On the y-axis we have y1 and y2 such that y1 is less than y2. A is a point such that AT1 is perpendicular to time and AY1 is perpendicular to the y-axis. B is another point such that BT2 is perpendicular to the x-axis and BY2 is perpendicular to the y-axis. Continuing with the text. Figure 3 explains two different levels of income, OY2 at OT1 time and OY1 at OT2 time. Independent of each other, both the income levels relate to economic statics. But income at OY2 level is higher than OY1 level. This is comparative statics, which compares two static levels of income as against dynamic economics, which traces out the path AB showing increase in income. Limitations. But comparative statics is not without limitations. 1. Its scope is limited, for it excludes many important economic problems. There are the problems of economic fluctuations and growth, which can only be studied by the method of dynamic economics. 2. Comparative statics is unable to explain the process of change from one position of equilibrium to another. It gives only a partial glimpse of the movements, for we have only the two still pictures to compare, whereas dynamics would give us a movie. 3. We are not sure when the new equilibrium will be established, because this method neglects the transitional period. This makes comparative statics an incomplete and unrealistic method of economic analysis. Conclusion. We sum up the discussion among macrostatics, macrodynamics, and comparative statics thus. Economic statics is the study of relations between economic variables at a point of time, whereas economic dynamics explains the relationship of economic variables through time. In a static economics, there is movement but no change in economic phenomena, while in dynamic economics, the fundamental forces themselves change. The former studies movement around the point of equilibrium, but the latter traces the path from one point of equilibrium to the other, both backward or forward. On the other hand, comparative statics studies and compares two static equilibrium positions. If savings at a point of time are S1 and at another moment of time S2, this is once over change, which is comparative statics. But if a given rise in savings leads to increase in investment, output, income, and to a further rise in savings, this sequence of interdependent events of continuous changes is dynamic in nature. No doubt economic dynamics is the antithesis of economic statics. Yet, the study of dynamic economics is a necessary adjunct to the hypothetical static analysis to enable economists to formulate generalizations. The raison d'etre of all static investigations is the explanation of dynamic change. On the other hand, dynamic economics is made up of static situations. If economic dynamics is the running picture of the working of the economy, economic statics relates to the stationary position of the economy. Thus, both economic dynamics and economic statics are essential for the study and solution of economic problems. Transition from microeconomics to macroeconomics. As methodological approaches, both microeconomics and macroeconomics were used by the classical and neoclassical economists in their writings. But it was Marshall who developed and perfected microeconomics as a method of economic analysis. Similarly, it was Keynes who developed macroeconomics as a distinct method in economic theory. Therefore, the actual process of transition from microeconomics to macroeconomics started with the publication of Keynes' general theory. This transition has taken place in the following branches of economics. Page 8. Microeconomics is the study of economic actions of individuals and small groups of individuals. It includes particular households, particular firms, particular industries, particular commodities, individual prices, wages, and incomes. Thus, microeconomics studies how resources are allocated to the production of particular goods and services and how efficiently they are distributed. But microeconomics in itself does not study the problem of allocation of resources to the economy as a whole. It is concerned with the study of parts and neglects the whole. As pointed out by Boulding, description of a large and complex universe of facts like the economic system is impossible in terms of individual items. Thus, the study of microeconomics presents an imprecise picture of the economy. But the orthodox economists like Piggio tried to apply microeconomic analysis to the problems of an economy. Keynes taught otherwise and advocated macroeconomics, which is the study of aggregates covering the entire economy, such as total employment, total income, total output, total investment, total consumption, total savings, aggregate supply, aggregate demand, and general price level, wage level, and cost structure. For understanding the problems facing the economy, Keynes adopted the macro approach and brought about the transition from micro to macro. Microeconomics assumes the total volume of employment as given and studies how it is allocated among individual sectors of the economy. But Keynes rejected the assumption of full employment of resources, especially of labor. From the macro angle, he regarded full employment as a special case. The general situation is one of underemployment. The existence of involuntary unemployment of labor in capitalist economies proves that underemployment equilibrium is a normal situation and full employment is abnormal and accidental. Keynes refuted Piaget's view that a cut in money wage would eliminate unemployment during a depression and bring about full employment in the economy. The fallacy in Piaget's argument was that he extended the arguments to economy which were applicable to a particular industry. Reduction in money wage rate can increase employment in an industry by reducing its cost of production and the price of the product, thereby raising its demand. But the adoption of such a policy for the economy leads to a reduction in employment. When money wages of all workers in the economy are reduced, their incomes are reduced correspondingly. As a result, aggregate demand falls, leading to a decline in employment in the economy as a whole. Microeconomics takes the absolute price level as given and concerns itself with relative prices of goods and services. How the price of a particular economy like rice, tea, milk, fan, scooter, etc. is determined. How the wages of a particular type of labor, interest on a particular type of capital asset, rent on a particular land, and profits of an individual entrepreneur are determined. But an economy is not concerned with relative prices, but with the general level of prices. And the study of the general level of prices falls within the domain of macroeconomics. It is a rise or fall in the general price level that leads to inflation and to prosperity and depression. Prior to the publication of Keynes's general theory, economists concerned themselves with the determination of relative prices and failed to explain the causes of inflation and deflation or prosperity and depression. They attributed the rise or fall in the price level to the increase or decrease in the quantity of money. Keynes, on the other hand, showed that deflation and depression were caused by the deficiency of aggregate demand, and inflation and prosperity by the increase in aggregate demand. It is thus the rise or fall in aggregate demand which affects the general price level rather than the quantity of money. Moreover, microeconomics being based on the assumption of full employment, it failed to provide an adequate explanation of the occurrence of trade cycles. It could not explain the turning points of the business cycles. By discarding the unrealistic assumption of full employment, Keynes and his followers have built models which not only explain the macroeconomic forces lying behind cyclical fluctuations, but also explain the turning points of the cycle. Another factor which has led to the transition from microeconomics to macroeconomics is the failure of microeconomics to deal with problems relating to the growth of the economy. Microeconomics concerns itself with the study of individual household, firm, or industry. But principles which are applicable to a particular household, firm, or industry may not be applicable to the economy as a whole. This is because the level of aggregation differs in micro theory from a macro theory. The classical economists committed the folly of applying micro theory to the economy as a whole while explaining economic growth. They emphasized the importance of saving or thrift in capital formation for economic growth. But in macro theory, saving is a private virtue and a public vice. This is because increase in aggregate saving leads to a decline in aggregate consumption and demand, thereby decreasing the level of employment in the economy. Therefore, to remove unemployment and bring economic growth require increase in aggregate investment rather than saving. For economic growth, Harrod and Domar have emphasized the dual role of investment. First, it increases aggregate income, and second, it increases the productive capacity of the economy. Page 9. Microeconomics is based on the laissez-faire policy of a self-adjusting economic system with no government intervention. The classical economists were the votaries of laissez-faire policy. They believed in the automatic adjustment in the malfunctioning of the economy. They therefore had no faith either in monetary policy or fiscal policy for removing distortions in the economy. They also believed in the policy of balanced budgets. Keynes, who brought about the transition from micro to macro thinking, discarded the policy of laissez-faire. He believed that such a policy did not operate in public interest, and it was this policy which had led to the Great Depression of 1930s. He therefore favored state intervention and stressed the importance of deficit budgets during deflation and surplus budgets during inflation, along with cheap money and dear money policies respectively. The Keynesian policy measures have been adopted along with direct controls by the capitalist countries of the world. Stock and flow concepts. The aggregates of macroeconomics are of two kinds. Some are stocks, typically the stock of capital K, which is a timeless concept. Even in period analysis, a stock must be specified at a particular moment. Other aggregates are flows, such as income and output, consumption and investment. A flow variable has a time dimension small t as per unit of time or per period. Stock is the quantity of an economic variable relating to a point of time. For example, store of cloth in a shop at a point of time is stock. Flow is the quantity of an economic variable relating to a period of time. The monthly income and expenditure of an individual, receipt of yearly interest rate on various deposits in a bank, sale of a commodity in a month are some examples of flow. The concept of stock and flow are used in the analysis of both microeconomics and macroeconomics. In microeconomics, in price theory or microeconomics, the concepts of stock and flow are related to the demand for and supply of goods. The market demand and supply of goods at a point of time are expressed as stock. The stock demand curve of a good slopes downwards from left to right, like an ordinary demand curve which depends upon price. But the stock supply curve of a good is parallel to the y-axis because the total quantity of stock of a good is constant at a point of time. On the other hand, the flow demand and supply curves are like the ordinary demand and supply curves which are influenced by current prices. But the price is neither a stock nor a flow variable because it does not need a time dimension. Nor is it a stock quantity. In fact, it is a ratio between the flow of cash and the flow of goods. In macroeconomics, the concepts of stock and flow are used more in macroeconomics or in the theory of income, output and employment. Money is a stock, whereas the spending of money is a flow. Wealth is a stock and income is a flow. Saving by a person within a month is a flow, while the total saving on a day is a stock. The government debt is a stock, but the government deficit is a flow. The lending by a bank is a flow, and its outstanding loan is a stock. Some macro variables like imports, exports, wages, income, tax payments, social security benefits and dividends are always flows. Such flows do not have direct stocks, but they can affect other stocks indirectly. just as imports can affect the stock of capital goods. A stock can change due to flows, but the size of flows can be determined itself by changes in stock. This can be explained by the relation between stock of capital and flow of investment. The stock of capital can only increase with the increase in the flow of investment, or by the difference between the flow of production of new capital goods and consumption of capital goods. On the other hand, the flow of investment itself depends upon the size of capital stock. But the stocks can affect flows only if the time period is so large that the desired change in stock can be brought about. Thus, flows cannot be influenced by changes in stock in the short run. Lastly, both the concepts of stock and flow variables are very important in modern theories of income, output, employment, interest rate, business cycles, etc. Page 10. Selected readings. K. E. Boulding, Economic Analysis, Part 2, 1996, Chapter 13. G. Ackley, Macroeconomic Theory, 1961, Chapter 1. W. H. Branson, Macroeconomic Theory and Policy, 1972, Chapter 1. Edward Shapiro, Macroeconomic Analysis, 4th edition, 1978, Chapter 1. F. S. Brumman, Macroeconomics, 4th edition, 1970, Chapter 1. Exercises. 1. Differentiate between macrostatics and macrodynamics and show that it is the study of macrodynamics which is more significant. 2. Discuss the nature of macrostatics. What is the essential feature of an economic system operating under static conditions? 3. Which aspects of the analysis of the economy-wide magnitudes are macro and which aspects static? Suitably illustrate your answer. 4. Bring out the relationship that exists between micro and macroeconomics. Also, distinguish between macrostatic and macrodynamics. 5. Distinguish between micro and macroeconomics. Explain the transition from microeconomics to macroeconomics. 6. What do you mean by macroeconomics? Discuss its scope. 7. Discuss the scope of macroeconomics. What are the limitations of macroeconomic analysis? 8. Write short notes on 1. Macrostatics, 2. Macrodynamics. 9. Distinguish between stock and flow. And 10. Explain how macroeconomics describes the economy in terms of macroeconomic variables. With this, we come to the end of Chapter 1. And also the end of Part 1.